Thanks very much. Hi, everybody. Thanks for sticking this out here. But I think we have a really interesting panel, so I'm happy to be here today. So I'm going to change the frame a little bit and continue on the dialogue of healthy food access, but I'm going to look at this from sort of a higher level lens and look at the role that zoning and land use and planning can play in facilitating access to healthier foods in communities. The first presenter, at least I have no financial relationships to disclose. Okay, I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues who have all been part of the Bridging the Gap research program with me, who really, without them, this study would not have been possible. So in 2012, the Institute of Medicine released a report on accelerating progress in obesity prevention, and I had the honor of being on that committee. And what we sort of recommended, or what we determined, was that in order to be effective and to have sort of targets that would hit all sectors of society, it's really going to take a multi-pronged approach. And this is nothing new. This is what we're all talking about now, about systems-level interventions and how do you target all sectors of society for influencing access to healthy foods, increasing physical activity, and creating a more healthy environment. So today I'm going to focus specifically on one aspect of the environment, which is how do you go about making healthier foods available everywhere. And I'm focusing specifically today on within the community. This is a path chart from Karen Glenn's and colleagues that was published in 2005, but it's very relevant to today's talk, and it's really focusing on the role of the policy and environment in influencing healthy eating behaviors. And specifically, I'm going to focus on the community nutrition environment and the role that zoning and land use can play in effectuating changes in the environment. If anybody was at my other side, the energy balance equation talk the other day on physical activity and the role that zoning can play in facilitating active environments, the same thing can happen here with zoning can influence the built environment and what types of outlets are available in communities for selling food, much like restricting availability of outlets like alcohol and tobacco and things like that, or restricting fast food outlets or convenience stores. For those of you who don't know much about zoning and land use, zoning, subdivision regulation, building codes, they're all exercises of the state police powers under the 10th Amendment to the Constitution. Typically, zoning authority is granted to county and municipal governments under that authority, really with the goal of promoting health, safety, and welfare within the community. And the protection of public health really lies at the heart of zoning and land use protections. Schilling and Linton have a really nice overview paper on this in American Journal of Preventive Medicine in 2005. If you're interested, I would look that up. This is a map that we compiled a couple years ago looking at where zoning authority is delegated down at the local levels. And as you can see, virtually the entire country, except for most of the Northeast, are municipal level. Oh, that top box should actually be a blue. I don't know what happened to the coloring here. But most of the county, country is delegated down to the municipal level. Hawaii is actually the only state where zoning only occurs at the county level. And then you have these green states where zoning is actually done through a combination of municipal and county level zoning. Although in the Northeast, pretty much the counties serve as jurisdictional boundaries, but they really don't have governing authority. So it's primarily a township level thing going on in the Northeast. Having zoning and land use laws, how can they be used to support healthy food environments? So traditionally, zoning is done through what's called use and density restrictions. So basically, zoning codes within a community will establish specific districts and zones within the community and the types of uses that are allowable. So they might include approved uses, such as permitted uses for things like supermarkets, grocery stores, convenience stores, farmers markets, fruit and vegetable carts, fruit and vegetable stands, fast food outlets, you name it, retail big box stores, Target, things like that. So when you think about your community, if you're in the vast majority of this country that hasn't undergone what's called a code reform, most of the country is designed in a way that each segment of a community is divided up into different types of uses. So you'll think about your major arterial roads that you'll drive in your community, where you'll have all your stores, you'll have your fast food outlets, your retail outlets, things like that. Those are all zoned for commercial use, and sometimes they might be zoned for for mixed uses and things like that. You'll have other areas of the community where you might have your subdivisions where it's just homes and things like that. That's just zoned for residential uses. And the reason why communities are structured that way is by virtue of how the zoning code is written and the types of uses that are allowed in different parts of the community. If you're a wonk like me and you're really interested in how your community is designed, the Planning and Zoning Office in your community has these zoning maps that will actually have a map for you and tell you, show you exactly how different parts of the community are designated from a zoning perspective. I just realized what happened. So for this study today, I'm focusing on two specific permitted uses, supermarkets and fruit and vegetable markets and stores. Although we did look at zoning for a variety of different outlets, for today's analysis, I just focused on two outlets specifically that will help to facilitate access to fruit and vegetable in the community. Previously, prior to our study, there have been two studies done by folks in North Carolina where they looked at the relationship between county and municipal zoning for healthy food outlets and accessibility to such outlets in rural North Carolina counties. They actually used the instrument that I created for my study. They got their data out much faster than I did, but it was really nice to see it validated and see that it actually got used, and it was in one state, whereas my study is from across the country. So what they found was that health food zoning was associated with the number of fruit and vegetable outlets within a community. And they did a qualitative study as well, which was really nice, which basically showed that what was key to implementation of the zoning code and facilitating access to fruit and vegetable outlets in the community was some type of enforcement from the planning and zoning offices. We didn't have the ability in our study to study the qualitative aspect of implementation, but something that I think is really worthwhile to pursue going forward. They also found that zoning was associated with increased fruit and vegetable consumption. And I have a follow-on study that I'm not presenting today, but I can tell you about at the end, where we also found similar results across the country. So here we sought to look nationally and look to see whether zoning for specific types of food outlets, specifically supermarkets and fruit and vegetable stores that typically sell fruit and vegetables, are associated with increased availability and density of such outlets in the communities nationwide. So our data were drawn from 314 secondary school catchments that are associated with the Monitoring the Future survey that's conducted at the University of Michigan. And it's a national sample of secondary school students that were enrolled in their surveys from the spring of 2011 to the summer of 2011 and the spring of 2012 through the summer of 2012. Those 314 secondary school catchments were actually associated with 676 county and municipal jurisdictions. So we actually collected the zoning codes for all 676 county and municipal jurisdictions that overlaid those secondary school catchments. There were a couple catchments that had boundaries that fell outside of a municipal and county jurisdiction, and there were very small slivers that accounted for less than like 1% of the catchment area, so those sort of got sliced off. But for the most part, we had about 98% of the jurisdictions overlaying those catchments. So we evaluated the zoning codes for permitted or conditional uses for supermarket fruit and vegetable stores and markets, as I said. We also, for this study, captured what I would consider to be the big box retailers, your Super Targets, your Walmarts, things like that, that actually typically have a whole supermarket area within them and they sell fruit and vegetables. So for this analysis today, I'm also presenting that data. I had a whole army, literally, of urban planning students. I'm very fortunate here at UIC to have a College of Urban Planning where I've been able to hire a number of urban planning students over the years who are very familiar with zoning codes, and so looking for needles in a haystack is not new to them. They're used to these zoning codes. So we trained them, and we had two coders review each jurisdiction's zoning codes. This is just a few pages from the zoning form. You can't see it. We had a paper version, but then we scanned it in. But basically, we looked across all those outlets I listed for you before, supermarkets, grocery stores, convenience stores, fast food outlets, things like that. We looked to see the types of permitted and conditional uses. whether it was a prohibited use, like in the case of fast food outlets, things like that. And then we looked across districts and zones within the community, so commercial areas, residential areas, mixed-use areas, things like that. For today's analysis, I'll tell you in a minute what we did with all that. Our outlet data was drawn from a couple of different sources. For those of you familiar with food outlet data, primary sources typically are Dun & Bradstreet and InfoUSA. We drew initially our outlet for all of our 314 catchments from the Dun & Bradstreet database, but then based on work that my colleague Lisa Powell and others have done, we know that that's not the most reliable data source. So we also ground-truthed all the data from the Dun & Bradstreet database by having people in the communities to actually observe the outlets on the ground. It wasn't just done for this study, it was part of a much broader study that we did as part of the Bridging the Gap study. So I just happened to be fortunate that we had people on the ground in every single jurisdiction where we were able to ground truth the availability of these outlets in those jurisdictions. So they were looking for two types of stores, supermarkets and fruit and vegetable stores. So we had a definition of what was qualified as a supermarket, because in every jurisdiction, you know, there's low corner stores and grocery stores and things like that. So to qualify as a supermarket, it didn't just meet the NIACS code that you would see in Dun & Bradstreet or InfoUSA. When we ground-truthed it, we actually went in, had to sell fresh meat, and at least had two service counselors, butcher or meat department, deli or bakery, and at least four cash registers. And it also had to sell a wide range of fruit and vegetables. If it only sold like a few, it didn't qualify as a supermarket. And then fruit and vegetable stores were identified post hoc based on their name. Typically, those are not identified within Dun & Bradstreet data or InfoUSA, so we ground truth those. Our healthy food outlet zoning measure was a dichotomous measure where we took all the jurisdictions that had zoning for the three outlets we were interested in, supermarkets, fruit and vegetable stores, retail, big box retailers, across all the districts or zones in the community, and we just created a dichotomous measure of do they have permitted uses for these types of outlets or not, and then we compiled them into one overall measure of any healthy food outlet zoning permitted uses or not. We created a similar measure for retail general, the big box outlets. And then we weighted each measure. So remember, we had the 676 jurisdictions. So each catchment had on average about 2.6 county and or municipal jurisdictions associated with each catchment. So for each catchment, we weighted the proportion of the population within the catchment that was exposed to this healthy food outlet zoning to come up with a scale of 0 to 1, and then we log transformed it from 0 to 10. On the outlet side, we not only did we capture the number of outlets within each catchment, the supermarket and fruit and vegetable stores and stands, but we also created a measure of density, so how many outlets per square mile within the catchment. We did generalized linear models, control for all sorts of things at the jurisdictional level, at the county level or catchment level. We clustered on site. And we use survey-weighted commands with sampling weights as well. So what did we find? This is just a summary of the sample information. As you can see, we had about half of the catchments had permitted use zoning for supermarkets or fruit and vegetable stores, and nearly more than three quarters specifically permitted the big box type stores. The density of healthy food outlets per square mile was about 0.20, or 1 in 5. It was majority white catchments and heavy from suburban and rural areas. And about half of the catchments were medium to low income. And we had nice distribution across region, although we had about 40% in the southern region. So just a brief descriptive statistics for you here on prevalence and density of the outlets. So on your left-hand panel, you'll see the number of outlets, and on your right-hand panel, you'll see the density, the number of outlets per square mile. The green bars tell you that they don't have any zoning for the specific type of outlet. On the bottom of the panel, you'll see supermarket, fruit, vegetable store, and retail general. So the green bars, they don't zone for it. The orange bar is they have some type of zoning for it, and the brown bar is that you have 100% exposure within the catchment to that type of zoning. So what this basically means is, here on the left-hand panel, is that on average, we actually saw about 4.1 or 2 outlets, supermarkets and fruit and vegetable outlets in jurisdictions with 100% exposure to zoning, as compared to only 2.5% or so, or 2.5 outlets in jurisdictions that allow for some of the catchment to be zoned for it versus none. We still saw some outlets in jurisdictions that didn't have explicit permitted use for supermarkets, fruit and vegetable stores, because they qualified into some other category of stores, and so we have a little bit of a measurement error there. But you can see a huge differentiation between 100% exposure and number of outlets versus none. In terms of the density, we see even greater distinguishing factors. So we have significantly more outlets per square mile in jurisdictions that permit these specific types of outlets as opposed to don't. And the same thing happens on the retail big box store side of things, just less pronounced than these fruit and vegetable outlets. So what did we find? We basically found that a 10% increase in the proportion of the catchment that was exposed to zoning led to about 6 to 7% more healthy food outlets per square mile in the catchment. Model 1 did not control for the big box store zoning. Model 2 does control for the big box store zoning, and that's that 9.3% increase in that risk or the rate ratio here in that second row in Model 2. Basically, what we're seeing here is that zoning, if you zone for it, you'll see a higher likelihood of these outlets in community. And so you really need zoning to sort of provide the authorization in the community to allow for these outlets to occur. So if you are a public health person and you have an opportunity to work with planning and zoning officials, you know, one thing you can do is sort of review the language in the zoning code to see specifically the types of outlets that they're writing about. Oftentimes the zoning codes are written very generically, and they're written about stores in particular. If you want to really increase the availability of certain types of outlets in certain parts of the community, an opportunity may exist next time the zoning code is rewritten to sort of designate certain areas of the community to specifically allow for specific types of outlets. I'm not talking about this today, but we used to have a restrictive covenant ordinance here in Chicago, which basically precluded certain types of outlets like supermarkets from going back into an area that previously had been used as a supermarket. And we were able to get rid of that restrictive covenant ordinance, but that still exists in certain parts of the country, so that's something else to look for on the corollary side. So my take-home message, it's my favorite message with my zoning studies, because they all sort of tend to say the same thing, which is if you zone for it, it'll come. I did mention we have a follow-on study that I haven't had a chance to present here yet, but we did a longitudinal, a mediation analysis looking at the relationship between zoning, the availability of the outlets, and adolescent fruit and vegetable consumption. And we saw really nice results, both in terms of increased consumption of fruit and vegetable amongst adolescents, both in terms of the number of fruit and vegetables are exposed to within the community, as well as based on outlet availability. So I'm going to stop here because we're out of time, but I very much appreciate everybody staying. It's really nice to have such a large audience the last session of the last day. So thank you.